I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University. Hello, Martin.
It's always a pleasure to jump on and plenty to discuss, Michael.
Well, there's more than plenty to discuss. I mean, there's the whole dashed world, there's the whole geopolitical sphere, Martin, not to mention the national one, the state one, and the local one here in Western Australia. The National Department of Defence decided that they would sell off Lewin Barracks on one of the most superb locations on the Swan River, Derbal Yerrigan, in East Fremantle, and it's got people chattering, will we get the social housing outcomes we need? But Martin, before we go anywhere like that, if you go to England, you have the Conservative Party, Labour Party, the Lib Dems. You've probably got Greens, you've got Scots up the north, you've got, what do they call themselves, the Reform Party. Go to Canada, they've got Tories and National Democratic Party, the Liberals, and a range of other strange parties. And it looks like here in Australia, we're back to having, if there was such a time, Liberals, Nationals, perhaps they'll become the Country Party again. One Nation, Labour Party, Greens. We used to talk about the coalition, but is it appropriate anymore?
Well, not right now, it's certainly not. It has been another action-packed week for the coalition and not in ways that they would want. It's not true that no news is good news, or all news is gives you exposure. In the case of the coalition, they were given another golden gift here where inflation was on the rise and the Reserve Bank had to raise interest rates. That has very unfortunate outcomes, of course, Michael, for homeowners, anyone with a mortgage, those trying to afford housing, all of those things. But do you think they could lay a glove on the government over this? Not at all, because again, there was a whole week of discussing will they or won't they get back into bed together as a coalition. So you've got that big argument. They met several times to discuss it. I think they're both issuing certain demands around this. It doesn't look like they've made much progress at the moment. And on top of that, you've got question marks over the leadership of both the Liberal and National parties, which doesn't help. So starting with the Liberals, Michael, there's still speculation about when Susan Ley will face a challenge, probably from Angus Taylor at some stage, it looks like now. That's going to happen, I think, sooner or later. It's just a case of when. And the Nationals did have their own leadership challenge of sorts. This past week, where a backbencher challenged David Littleproud, didn't get very far, but I don't think that's necessarily the end of the matter there. So, and then you've got One Nation's polling on the rise, and they're trying to announce new defectors. I think Corey Bernardi is their latest addition from South Australia. This guy's got a history of defections anyway. Nothing's new there, in a kind of way. He's going to run for them in the South Australian state election. Again, all the spotlight on what you might call the three right of centre parties, and not much focus on the positives and negatives of government at the moment.
What do you think of my idea of renaming the Nationals the Country Party? Do you think it might be a bit more accurate?
Well, they've been there, of course. They were started as a country party. They were the country party for most of their existence. And I think that the intention there was to try and, of the renaming, and someone will know more than me, but I think they renamed themselves in the early 90s, somewhere around then. It might have been Tim Fischer's leadership, the Nationals. And I think the intention was to appeal more to regional centres. So they're not just for country people, but for, in New South Wales, your Waggas, your Dubbos, your Newcastles, those sort of places. And there's plenty of regional centres in Queensland that they do a ride in. I don't know if that necessarily makes a big difference, but yeah, it'd be an interesting move back to the Country Party, I think, Michael.
Martin, in Western Australia, which provides in some, and indeed in many respects, good examples of the way things could be, when the Labor government was in power some years ago, they still are, but before they lost it at one point, they were doing deals with a quite separately organised National Party here in Western Australia. It seemed to work well for good government. It produced royalties for regions. Is there a case to be made for having a strong, independent, rural-focused party?
You make a really good point, and for our listeners outside WA, they're probably not familiar with the West Australian Nationals, that for a good part of their time in the last couple of decades have ran their own race largely, especially in opposition, Michael. So they're really, they've got an opposition alliance, but really they do a lot of their own thing, mostly in opposition. They formulate their own policies. Even in government, they had an agreement where they could vote against certain measures of government if they affected the regions, and they acted quite independently in that sense. Famously, they concocted their own royalties for regions policy ahead of the 2008 elections that stood them in good stead, and they won extra seats in areas they'd never held before. And most recently, at the election last year, when generally Liberals did really poorly, the Nationals held on to their seats. And outperformed the Liberals in several of these three-corner contests. So I think it's worked for them fairly well. They've got almost as many seats in WA as the Liberals do, Michael. They were briefly the opposition party after the 21 election. So they've been able to at least stabilise their base here in WA. And I think One Nation will continue to poll all right in the upper house, but in the lower house, I can't see them winning many seats.
What is the future, do you think, of One Nation? Is it something more than a protest party? Does it simply provide a natural outlet for those who think more to the right on immigration and a range of other issues?
I think that's being a protest party, an outsider party might be a better way of describing it, Michael, has been the bread and butter of One Nation since its existence. Its appeal to people is that Pauline Hanson doesn't seem like a regular politician because she's a bit of a maverick and speaks differently. And, I was asked about xenophobia and said, please explain. That was mocked by a lot of, mainstream politicians. But for people who also didn't know what that word meant, Michael, it was actually quite appealing for them. And I think that does speak to these two worlds. There's this other world where if you're cynical about politicians and cynical about what they can and can't do, One Nation's kind of appealing in that sense. So if they went too mainstream, I think they'd lose some of that appeal. And their polling at the moment, I think, is born out of voter frustration.
Martin, you've mentioned that One Nation's numbers are on the rise at the moment. The other major parties' numbers, I think, have dropped a little. Is there anything to suggest that there's a rise, broadly speaking, of support for the major parties, or are we living in this sort of disassembled political world in Australia now?
Well, you might have heard me say this before, Michael, but the vote share for major parties has been in decline for the last 2.5 decades very consistently. So their primaries keep dropping and dropping. And I don't think either side of politics had really paid this enough attention until it started to bite into them. So we saw the Greens for a while, not this most recent election, but election before, start to win more seats in the lower house. And then at the last election, we saw, last two elections, we've seen Teals do well on the coalition side in their seats. So, and now you're talking One Nation. But really, Michael, this has been a while coming. It was just that they couldn't find concentrated votes in enough areas to win lower house seats. But actually, the voters have been moving away from major parties for about 20 years now, and the vote share of minor parties keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, Mrs. Worthington was famously told not to put a daughter on the stage, but she might well be advised to put a daughter into a Teals setting, Martin, at the next election. Who knows what the future of independents are in Australia? We'll continue to find out, I guess. But turning to the UK, who I mentioned a bit earlier, it looks like Keir Starmer is under considerable pressure there. Has been for some time. The Reform Party there has grown. Not exactly like, so far as its background is concerned, our One Nation, but having a lot in common just the same. The Conservatives there are struggling along as well, it seems. But it seems the current problems of Keir Starmer all to do with that fellow Epstein. He just doesn't go away, Martin. We seem to be immune, as far as I know, save for Paul Keating's daughter, from the Epstein effect.
So this is the inverse, the opposite of the Midas touch. It's the Epstein touch, where anyone that's mentioned or seen in contact with Epstein suddenly has questions to answer. And the more contact, the worse. And this fellow Mandelson, he was appointed Britain's ambassador to the US, no less. So,
Lord
Lord Mandelson.
Mandelson.
And he was in this role until a couple of days ago. And it emerges that not only is he, friends with Epstein, like lots of people were, but he appears, he may have been sharing sensitive information with him, which is an extraordinary accusation, really, that he's not put to bed. There was photos of him in what looks like a pretty compromised position. His reputation's in tatters. He's been sacked effectively, but the guy that appointed him is no less than the Prime Minister of Britain. And you're right, it was already quite unpopular, but now his judgment is being severely questioned about this, and I think he's finding it really, really difficult going.
It's a really tough one. I don't know. I mean, there's a study to be made how Epstein got to have the influence, and he had people like European royals running around after him and the like. I mean, he's obviously some sort of charming, seductive individual that people felt easy with, a good entertainer by all accounts. And I'm not even referring to the terribly sordid side of things for which he's been convicted. But I imagine it's all driven by money, Martin. Is money the root of all evil?
Money's got a lot to do with it. It's about money and connections and networking. So if this guy is seen to have access to important people, powerful people, socialites, etc., everyone wanted a piece of the action. And you're getting all sorts of people that are sucking up to Epstein, including in particular probably Andrew and his ex-wife Sarah Ferguson, whose sort of sycophantic nature of their emails looks particularly poor at the moment, of course, Michael, given everything that's happened. But they're not alone, as a lot of others have mentioned in passing. Elon Musk was mentioned quite a few times there. Look, I'm less worried about people that are just mentioned in passing, Michael, because it's just, everyone knows everyone else in those sorts of circumstances. But there's certainly a few of them that have much deeper questions to answer.
We never lose sight of AUKUS here on View from the Roundhouse. If we swivel and stop on our 360-degree turn from the Roundhouse, we're looking straight down at Garden Island, HMAS Stirling, Rockingham, Henderson, all the places where AUKUS-related activities are meant to be taking place. And if they don't, of course, they'll still be there doing naval and related military things. The suggestions that AUKUS might just slip from our grasp, Martin.
Well, this is, we've had a strong focus on AUKUS because there's national, state, and local implications, Michael. And part of the problem with AUKUS has always been the volatile nature of the Trump administration. They've never said that they're walking away from AUKUS exactly. They called a review into it. We've got some public statements from Trump now, especially at the meeting with Albanese in favor of it. But you never quite know. And the policy positions of the Trump administration can change quickly. And recently, there was a meeting with Trump and Xi, and it's again discussion around Taiwan. A lot of people are saying if Trump, barges into Venezuela and Greenland and other places he's talking about, what authority does he really have to keep China out of Taiwan? And that's an interesting discussion. And does he really have the appetite to do it as well? I think that they're all open questions. And the stance that he takes, you just can't assume he's going to follow other presidents.
The Taiwan business is important because we're going back some time on View from the Roundhouse, discussed AUKUS in terms of the Americans wanting to have this base, China looking base with nuclear submarines, albeit in the name of Australia, ready to deal with China. That's our militaristic posture. And if anything traditionally was to happen in Taiwan, it was thought we would rush there. But it sounds like, from what one reads, that the Americans, or at least some of them in the Congress, don't think giving Australia what would be effectively American submarines is such a good idea. And probably many Australians who would agree with them.
Well, yeah, but I think Australians and Americans have very different reasons for getting to that conclusion. So the Americans want to prioritize America, and why are we including Australia in our submarine run when we're still producing our own submarines? And Australian concerns are based around being a satellite of the US and what that really means, and whether you'd have nuclear powered submarines in the port. So some really different concerns at either end. So the Australian government is very strongly behind this and very keen to make it happen. Of course, you open with that statement about not just Lewin Barracks, but up at Karrakatta, there's a number of sites across Australia they're shelving. There's some consternation, I think, in some circles about what that really means for defence facilities and how are they going to operate. I'm not convinced that the best place for defense facilities is in pristine, to have them where there's pristine views over the Swan River, Michael. I think that unless it's a major strategic position, of course, which the roundhouse is, by the way, Michael, but less so Lewin Barracks. So you may as well ship that off if you can get really good outcomes for the community. It's a big if there at the end. But if that could be used more productively, I don't think Lewin Barracks is used that much. I know there's people stationed there, but I don't think it's a major strategic facility, is it?
No, and I think I only got three or five runs when I batted there on the lovely cricket ground many, many years ago, Martin. No, it'll sell for a pretty penny. There'll be a debate in Fremantle about is there sufficient arrangements for affordable housing, let alone social housing, in this magnificent spot on the river. I guess that'll get played out at a state level here because local governments don't have much control over housing and major commercial development these days, Martin.
They might sell, the federal government will sell the site, but you're absolutely right. It'll come down to state planning, what happens with that site and what's permitted on that site. There's an enormous amount possible. I think some forms of affordable housing would be really interesting, other forms of residential housing, but good amenity through that area. It's a bit tricky. It's in a beautiful, pristine location, but access, current access wouldn't be great if you've got a lot of people moving in there. So there's a lot of things to consider there to make that work. But it's potentially a really positive concept.
Martin, had you, like me, never heard of Bad Bunny until about a week or two ago?
I'm not I'm totally out of the picture with Bad Bunny, but you'll be able to enlighten me, Michael. You're always across these things.
Well, I used to have wonderful, bright people called associates working for me when I was a full-time judicial officer, and they kept me abreast of everything. But now I'm dependent on popular culture, and this fellow Bad Bunny pops up at the big awards in the US the other day. So I look into him, I bring up the song that he's famous for. I sent it to a friend in Adelaide who speaks Spanish just to test out whether she really speaks Spanish, and she listened to the song and sent me a text back and said, "He's Costa Rican. That's the way they speak Spanish in Costa Rica." Turns out she's dead right, which I suppose is how someone from Mexico or further down would be able to stay in the United States. But this person then stands up at the awards ceremony and sort of says, "I should be out. I mean, out of everywhere." It's fascinating to see in that sense free speech at work. But Trump has also been, it seems, pulling lots and lots of ICE agents out of Minneapolis and places.
Am I right? Like I said, I don't know much about Bad Bunny, but isn't he also, isn't he doing the halftime big halftime performance at the Super Bowl.
Well, it is, and that will be one hell of an
So that's a
attraction.
big audience. That's a much bigger audience than the awards. That's, if he fires up there, that's another thing altogether. Biggest event in America, isn't it?
It is, and people really argue about it. And if you do the wrong thing, and you're in trouble. But it does raise a very interesting question, Martin, about how we around the world, particularly in Australia, I suppose, communicate the role of sports people to sort of mediate sensible discussions, ditto with performers. I mean, how do we say sane and respectful in this modern world? And the political parties are busting up. People say nasty things about each other. We've had Bondi, we've got a royal commission, and you sort of have to watch your P's and Q's. How do you manage it?
Well, I don't pretend to have all the answers, but I've got to say, I did read a fantastic piece on the Fremantle Shipping News recently, Michael, and it was entitled, the piece was Bruce Menzies was the author, and he drew on a number of ideas, and you can find it's called Peace and Positivity. This is our cross promotion, Michael, that we're doing here. Okay, apparently all the media outlets do this.
All
You
right.
promote one thing off another part, but your Peace and Positivity piece by Bruce Menzies was fantastic, and what he argues using is the work of Tyndale. If you log on to Shipping News, you'll get this: is the need to have open, honest perspectives from all parties, but in a respectful way, in a way that you can actually come together and agree to disagree on things and agree that there are many, many different parts of your society and your society is richer. But also drew on the words of Noel Pearson, I believe, as well. And it's about how you have a society for which there's pluralism, lots of different ideas, but actually you have a common desire to come together in that space. And just thought it was a fascinating piece. So I don't have the answers, but maybe you pick up that piece and they do.
Be a real challenge for sort of serious politicians of certain sorts who it seems want to pull people apart to win power and then to consolidate their power. There have to be some sort of self-denying ordinances in all of this, don't there?
Well, I think that this does speak really profoundly to this concept that, and we've been asked this question post-Bondi, where what are we allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say? Well, I would like that we're allowed to say more things, and but I think also there's both right to say more things and your responsibility to say them in a respectful way. I think those the two things come hand in hand. It'd be good if we're able to achieve both.
Paradoxically, one might say the imminent visit to Australia of the Israel President Isaac Herzog might be for our lasting benefit. You can be wholly in sort of denial of what he stands for and yet have respectful debates, have appropriate demonstration if that's what happens, and I think it will. It might be good for the civic minded Australian community when all said and done, Martin.
Probably the best outcome is to have that Herzog visit and to have, as you say, peaceful protest, the ability for people to have their say in the streets if they and critique the Israeli government and Herzog and the statements he's made. If they're able to do both, and we don't have violence break out, etc., then I think both of those perspectives will be aired.
Martin, having said all that, I must say, tongue in cheek, that I can't imagine that the Nationals and the Liberal Party will be having any such amenable discussions anytime soon. Martin, on the Australia Day, Invasion Day, we had this terrible incident where a fellow threw a bomb. He wanted it to blow up, it seems, full of ball bearings and scrap, and it would have very likely, if it had happened, injured, if not killed people. Terrible thing. He's now been charged with a terrorist offence, I think under West Australian law, although there was a joint Fed state group who looked into all of this. It's strange to think that we now have terrorist offences in Western Australia, let alone anywhere in the country. And of course, there are the charges over Bondi that are terrorist related as well. Are we in some new era when it comes to these sorts of charges? Is it, I mean, is the nomenclature, is the description of these as terrorist charges, a bit confusing for the average punter?
It is a bit confusing, and there is some discussion around what constitutes a terrorist attack and what doesn't. After some sort of period of silence, we've now got correspondence from the WA police that they are lifting this as a terrorist incident, and they've given some reasons why. They've got allegations around the motive of the person involved. It was. It seems accessing, well, according to their accusation, this all go to trial, Michael. Allegedly accessing white supremacy content, pro-white content. So there's a racist element, they say, to this attack, and they see this as a political attack on a group of people. That's clearer advice from WA police than they had offered previously. It was a shocking incident. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but they may well have been. And if this was a serious bomb, then the consequences would have been awful. On face value, if you accept some of this information from the WA police, it would appear that this is listed as a terrorist attack justifiably. That's a bit of a rude awakening here in Western Australia, Michael.
And how one responds to what seem to be, increasingly don't want to use the expression lone wolf, but individual actors who get either used or motivated by what's going on around the place to go out and do something like this, I think has to become the subject of greater discussion. We touched on this before. I don't know how it's done. I'm no expert in the area.
I think absolutely our intelligence services need to keep a very close eye on this. We're told that sovereign citizens are already in their crosshairs. We had that Desi Freeman guy in Victoria example. Far right people, racist, far right white supremacists and the like, absolutely, being radicalized online. Going into a community of people that may share their views. Clearly, there's a role for ASIO and the Federal Police in trying to investigate this and shut this down.
Well, Martin, I think we've come to the end of this week's view from the roundhouse. I'm pleased to say I was up in the early hours of the morning, went down, took some photographs of the Seven Seas Explorer luxury cruise ship arriving in town in Freo. Martin, all's quiet and well, it seems, on the cruise ship. And I suppose once the football season starts again and the Dockers start winning, we won't really need to worry too much about all of these enormous issues we've just been discussing.
And State of Origin's coming very soon to Western Australia, Michael. So there's endless discussion about that as well. So you've got a triple treat
All right, well, I'll go and study who's in the team in a moment.
there.
Thanks for joining me today.
Pleasure as always, Michael.
See you next week.